Welcome to Caregiver Help Radio with your host, Elaine Sanchez. Elaine is an author, speaker, and co-founder of CaregiverHelp.com, a video-based caregiver support program. Elaine's passion for helping others comes from her own experience of caring for family elders. Join us as we share experiences and explore ways to find hope and humor in caregiving. Now, here's your host, Elaine Sanchez.
At church yesterday, a friend came up to me in a bit of a panic and she said, "I need your website address. My mother-in-law has just been diagnosed with Alzheimer's and she's doing some really crazy things. She's been writing a lot of checks for odd amounts and sending multiple payments to some places, and she's been hiding some of her other bills in really odd places. I found an insurance bill in the grandkids' toy box last week. My husband tried to tell her that she just can't manage her money anymore and that we need to start doing it for her. And she got really agitated and upset. We don't know how to convince her that she's confused and just can't manage this anymore without our help." I took a deep breath, put my arms around my friend, gave her a big hug, and I said, "I'm so sorry. This is a hard time for all of you." We only had a few minutes, and then someone interrupted our conversation, and I didn't get to finish telling her what I wanted her to know. Starting with the fact that her mother-in-law's behavior is absolutely normal and predictable for someone who has Alzheimer's. And secondly, that you can never, ever, ever reason with or convince a person with dementia that their reality is not real and that yours is. I've been thinking about Pat and her family since then, and it's made me realize what an incredibly long and difficult journey it can be when you start down this path of caring for someone who can no longer care for him or herself. And I believe that the first place to start is with education. And fortunately, there are some great conferences that you can attend, and there are wonderful disease-specific websites that offer valuable information that help you understand what's happening to your loved one and how you can best support them. This week, I'll be doing a keynote speech and three breakout sessions at the 6th Annual Mid-America Institute on Aging that's going to be held on the campus of the University of Southern Indiana in Evansville, Indiana. The focus is on providing practical tools and groundbreaking information related to successful aging and gerontology. Topics will range from everything from financial planning to healthy aging, coping with illness, and finding ways to laugh at absurd and difficult situations. This is an exciting opportunity for me because I get to share what I've learned about dealing with the anger, guilt, depression, and grief often associated with caregiving. And I also get to attend sessions hosted by experts in different fields. I'm especially happy that I'll get to meet Tipa Snow. She's one of my heroes. I'll get to hear her presentation on best practices in dementia care. So regardless of where you are in your caregiving journey, I believe that investing the time in education will be one of the most important and powerful things you can do to help your care receiver and to manage your own needs as well. 2 years ago, I was invited to speak at the Mississippi Alzheimer's State Conference, and I had a wonderful time, met so many interesting people, and I came away being thoroughly impressed with the innovative way the state of Mississippi was supporting people with Alzheimer's and their caregivers. And today, I'm delighted to welcome to the program Melora Jackson. Melora is the training and program specialist for the southern half of Mississippi's Division of Alzheimer's Disease and Other Dementia under the Department of Mental Health in Long Beach, Mississippi. Melora, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It's wonderful to talk to you again. Tell me what is happening with your upcoming conference.
Well, we've got a pretty exciting conference this year. Our keynote speaker is Dr. Alan Power. He wrote a book called Dementia Beyond Drugs, and he is big advocate of the Eden Alternative, which utilizes a more holistic approach to Alzheimer's care. And so we're excited to have him. And one of the neat features this year in our conference is because we are doing it in a performing arts center venue, we have access to a wonderful stage. And we have a troupe from Chicago called the Time of Your Life Players. And they're going to be putting on a musical play that we are opening to the public as well as to our attendees called Rock and Roll AD. And it's a person, a baby boomer, who is a band, a rock and roll band leader and develops Alzheimer's, and it's sort of his journey through that experience.
Is this play based on a real-life experience?
Yes and no. The individual who wrote it does not have Alzheimer's himself, but he had people in his family with this experience, and so he went and did his homework and talked to people who have early-onset Alzheimer's disease, as well as local Alzheimer's care agencies in the Chicago area, and made sure he got his facts right as he wrote this about this. So he had a family tie to it, but he himself does not actually have it.
And is it a musical? Is that what I understood?
It is. It's a musical, and we are told that people who watch it will laugh and cry and laugh again.
I'm sure.
So there will be songs, and it's about an hour or so long, so it's not terribly long, but I think it will be a real good outreach tool and a good experience for those who watch it.
Oh, it sounds great. I think that one of the things that's most important for caregivers is to be able to laugh and to release some of that stress.
Absolutely.
One of the other things that I think is interesting, I just had a show a couple of weeks ago talking about reducing the amount of psychotropic drugs and increasing the quality of life for people with Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia through really all of us adjusting to what's going on in their reality and their needs rather than meeting our schedules and time frames. Is that what your keynote speaker is going to be addressing, you think?
Yes, pretty much. That's kind of his goal in a nutshell, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he focuses a lot on that. And the facility that he works at in New York, which name escapes me at the moment, but they have reduced their medication use to almost nothing. And so we're excited to have that because it falls in line with the philosophy
yes.
we have in our own division of trying to provide ways for folks to reduce the amount of medication use by utilizing other methods and increasing the quality of life for both that person with dementia and the people who are caring for them as well.
Yes. I just interviewed a woman from Ecumen, which is a company that is based in the Midwest. They have facilities in 5 Midwest states. And I think they reduced the number of drugs that by 800 people, by 800 residents, and it was saving $380,000 a month in medication costs. Isn't that amazing?
I am not surprised. It's amazing,
mm-hmm.
and it's wonderful.
It is wonderful because it is having a tremendous impact on the people with Alzheimer's that a lot of them had just been zombied out, I think, in an effort to control what we label challenging behaviors. And I think this new method seems to be helping people really identify what's going on with the person that they might not be able to express, and they're having much happier lives and much more peaceful existence. That's
yes,
very
absolutely.
Exciting.
And I think you see a culture change happening around the country,
mm-hmm.
but I think it's a growing trend,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to see more and more of this, and I think it's a wonderful thing.
It is a wonderful thing. You have a program called the Virtual... the Virtual Dementia Tour?
Yes. This program actually is a sensitivity training that was designed by a woman named P.K. Bevel, and she is the director of a very small nonprofit that's making big waves called Second Wind Dreams.
Okay.
And so we use this tool in Mississippi. We were granted permission by Second Wind Dreams and PK to provide this at no cost to people in Mississippi and to provide this training to long-term care settings and agency staff as well at no cost. And what it does is gives people a sense of what it's like to have dementia. We have found that we do this. We have done it with many populations across the state. We do it, of course, with healthcare providers and long-term care providers, but we also do it with family members. We do it with high school students. We've done it in a whole variety of settings. And what we have found is that the attitude shift before versus after is about the same for every group, that people become much more empathetic and understanding of what it's actually like for that person with dementia. And for caregivers especially, it helps them not only to be understanding of that person, but it increases their patience level. And it also helps that caregiver not to take these behaviors that occur personally, because they can understand now that those are actually just coping behaviors, that the person's not trying to be difficult. So it can ease the burden for those folks providing care.
Tell me how it works. What does a person experience when they go through this training?
We give them there's a pretest that kind of is a little attitude survey that's very short. We talk a little bit about what they're going to experience, and not a whole lot, because we don't want people to, you know, we want it to be a kind of a surprise when they go through it. So, in essence, what we do is garb people up with various things like goggles that limit their vision and noise in their ears. We put inserts into their shoes and glove them up and give them various impairments, some of which are just impairments that often occur as we age, some just sort of chronic conditions, and some of the impairments that are specific to people with dementia. Then we put them in what we call a mock patient room, which is just a sort of a bedroom or small apartment environment, and we give them tasks to do and then for a limited time. Well, they're in the experience trying to do these tasks. We have somebody who watches them and records their behaviors and makes sure they're safe, of course. And then after the experience, we do a post-test on their attitudes and then debrief with them about what they experienced, what these impairments were, how they felt, what does it all mean.
Interesting.
And so it can be done in a group environment, in a class kind of setting, or we can do it in an individual setting one-on-one. So we typically do that with family members, so we can give them one-on-one counseling afterwards, so they get, you know, to talk through that and how does that relate to their family member.
That's terrific. That's really terrific. And do you you go out and do this with groups, correct?
Yes, I do in Mississippi. All our staff does this around the state with folks in Mississippi. I have personally been through the training to become a certified trainer for Second Wind Dreams, which means that when I am not in Mississippi, when I go across state lines to Alabama or to Louisiana or even the panhandle of Florida, I can offer this training in other states. Now, there is a charge for it in other states. Mississippi is unique in our relationship with this. But I can go to other states and provide this training in whatever setting, you know, somebody would want me to for a nominal fee.
That's wonderful. I would think it would be very helpful.
Negotiated if somebody, doesn't have much money, we can always, you know, negotiate that, because we never want cost to be a barrier. We want people to understand what it's like and educate as many folks as we can.
Well, one of the things that so impressed me when I was there a couple of years ago is the fact that support for people with Alzheimer's and their caregivers is provided through the state of Mississippi, through the Department of Mental Health.
Yeah, and you know, Mississippi typically is the state, when most people think of Mississippi, they think that's the state that's the poorest, that has the least healthy people, and, you know, there's a lot of things that Mississippi gets a bad rap for, but this is one thing. Mississippi is doing very well, and we are the only state that has a formal Alzheimer's division anywhere in the state government. Our funding is primarily provided by settlements from the tobacco lawsuits that occurred back in the 80s and 90s, early 90s. So it's tobacco settlement money that went back to the state and then is put into investments. And so very little of it actually comes out of the taxpayer pocket, which is a wonderful way to provide a service that is so desperately needed and not cost folks a lot of money.
That's really wonderful. And then you work in conjunction or in cooperation with the Alzheimer's Association.
Absolutely, yeah. The Alzheimer's Association has a chapter in Mississippi that is the nonprofit agency in our state, and we collaborate on many projects. We put together a resource guide, which we also have in a PDF format, so it has resources that cover the state, but it's also a great manual for family members, caregivers, providers. It's sort of like the everything you want to know about Alzheimer's and dementia guide. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like almost, 200 pages long. But it is something we also have in a PDF file format. So should somebody outside of the state be interested in it, we certainly can provide that, electronically for free to anyone in the country who's interested in having a copy of it.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah. So we have that's a wonderful bonus, too. But we also collaborate on other projects. We will do workshops for the public together and any other kinds of things that we can think of to do together. We collaborate all the time. So people often confuse us, our two agencies, and that's okay, because what's important is that people are getting the information and the services that they need. So
that's right.
We don't care if they call us the association or one of them the division person. We work very well together.
Oh, that's fantastic. You have a couple of other things that I think are quite interesting. One is the Silver Alert system.
Yeah, Silver Alert is a notification system for when somebody goes off wandering. Now, about half of the states, nearly half of the states, have a Silver Alert system in place now. And we were like 17th or 18th state to get it. But basically, what it is, it's like Amber Alert.
Right.
Everybody's familiar with Amber Alert. But it's for anyone over the age of 18, from 18 to death, who has any kind of cognitive or intellectual impairment. So it could be somebody with dementia, it could be somebody with an intellectual disability or whatever. If that person goes missing, the Silver Alert system can be activated, and so the information goes out, electronic highway signs, media, whatever. There's a huge blitz to find that person right away. And so if the Silver Alert system is activated, we can notify surrounding states if there be any chance that the person is in a car or something like that. And we'll get the word out to them, and they can and help them with the media blitz, too, to get that person back. The law was passed to have it in Mississippi in July of 2010, and ever since then, every time it's been activated, we have found the person who went missing within 24 hours and gotten them home safely.
So that's terrific.
It's a great thing, and there is a movement towards a national Silver Alert system. I hope that Congress finds a way to pass a bill for that. It doesn't really cost much of anything. So I look forward to at least all the states getting it, if not a national system as well.
Well, it sounds like it would be a no-brainer. And people do not have to register for this ahead of time.
No, they don't. Now, there is a national office that advocates for it. One can Google that online, and you can register a person with that just to have that information more accessible, but it certainly is not necessary anyway.
Okay, that's a wonderful program. And then you also have a suicide prevention program. This is really quite interesting, and I noticed that you said it especially relates to caregiver burnout.
Right. Yeah, when you think of suicide, you don't think, automatically of Alzheimer's. The two don't seem to match up. However, we have in our Department of Mental Health, we have a suicide prevention campaign for all ages, and our division took on, of course, the suicide prevention in the elderly. people with Alzheimer's and dementia generally do not commit suicide.
No.
Even if they talk about it early on, they're not capable because they can't follow tasks in a sequence,
mm-hmm.
and they usually can't complete the act. But caregivers are at very high risk
mm-hmm.
because of burnout. And so we want to reach out to people who are older adults, especially those who are in caregiving roles, and especially men, because more men tend to do it to commit suicide after the age of 65 than women, because they have don't often get those opportunities to deal with those situations of caregiving kinds of situations in their younger life, and so they tend to do it even more. But we want to reach out to anyone who's a caregiver and make sure that they're getting some support and the tools that they need so that that isn't so that suicide is not even a consideration
That's
for them.
Good. I want to talk about that in just a little bit more, but first I want to thank people for tuning in to Caregiver Help Radio. We are hosted on webtalkradio.net. My guest is Melora Jackson with the Mississippi Department of Mental Health, and I'm Elaine Sanchez. Melora, what should people be looking for? What are the signals? Say that I'm an adult child and perhaps, you know, one of my parents is taking care of another. Say my dad were taking care of my mother who has Alzheimer's. What kind of signals should I be aware of that might tell me that he could be at a risk of suicide?
Okay. Well, statements of hopelessness or helplessness,
mm-hmm.
such as saying things like, I don't know if I can go on. Changes in eating or sleeping patterns, either doing far more than usual or far less than usual.
Mm-hmm.
Increased prescription drug use or stockpiling medications. Sometimes that's also an indicator just of a hidden substance abuse problem, but it can also be an indicator that they're stockpiling because they want to use them to overdose.
Oh, interesting.
Elaborate goodbyes or social withdrawal. Also, with the older adult, a rush to complete or revise a will.
Okay.
Not because they're finally getting around to something they felt like they've been putting off forever,
mm-hmm.
but just like, I've got to get it done now.
Mm-hmm.
And another trait that's kind of unique with this population is a sudden elevated mood or a sense of relief right before a suicide attempt because they've made a decision. Now, when a teenager attempts to commit suicide, that's more frequent. Teenagers, typically for every 150 to 200 attempts that teenagers make, one actually dies.
Uh-huh.
With older adults, people those 65 and older, it's 1 in 4.
Wow.
So when a senior shows these warning signs, you need to take it very seriously
mm-hmm.
because they're much more likely to go through
mm-hmm.
with it.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about that for a minute. If you see that in a family member and if you are concerned, what should a person do?
If you see those signs, you're not sure if there's a professional that they're involved with that you can trust, talk to them. One great national resource is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be in crisis. You can just call for information, or somebody can call if they're concerned about someone and talk and get more help. And that number is 1-800-273-TALK.
Okay.
So anyone can call that anywhere in the country 24 hours a day.
I will put that in the program description. Mm-hmm. Would you recommend talking to this person directly and say, I've seen some things that make me very concerned. I'm worried about you.
Yes, I think that's always a good option to do that, unless the person seems to be very agitated, or if there's somebody who's not generally been willing to listen to
uh-huh.
other people and their advice. That's something you kind of have to gauge. But it's good to address those things because sometimes those warning signs may not be as severe as we think. Sometimes it may be somebody who's just really struggling and just needs some help and isn't sure how to express it. And sometimes they really are very serious about this. So, yeah, you may or may not get the answers that you want to hear. But it's the beginning of intervening and getting some help,
mm-hmm.
absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And, my feeling is that a lot of times caregivers, especially those who are in the greatest generation, have a tendency to think that they need to do this all by themselves, that they are reluctant to be a burden or to ask for help or to even recognize the role that they have and the stress that under which it puts them. And so they just keep, you know, they just strap on that yoke and go. So my experience has been, if you can get them a little respite care or get them some help or get them in a support group where they can express their feelings and get some support from other people, that can also be a help.
Absolutely. That's a very important piece of preventing suicide and just caregiver support in general. If we can find ways to make it acceptable to that individual to receive care, not only to offer respite, but to make it, you know, something that they're not ashamed to take, then that helps a lot. Mm-hmm. So any way we can do that is great, and support groups are a great tool for that.
Mm-hmm.
And that support groups are not always traditional, you know, group meetings. I mean, they can be online these days, as obviously, you're offering. And they can be national hotline calls,
right,
in groups.
Right.
All kinds of alternatives. So, yeah, finding support for that individual and some respite is really critical.
Right. Were you aware that my online program really got started at your conference 2 years ago?
No, I had maybe an inkling that there was some inspiration there, but I didn't know that it was actually, we had that profound an impact on you, but I'm very glad to hear that.
It all started, I believe Kathy Van Cleve was the person who called me and invited me to do the keynote speech. And I was thrilled because I love speaking to caregivers who are taking care of people with Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. That's just where my heart is. And I was very excited. And then she said, "Do you do anything else?" And I said, "Oh, yes, I do." I said, "As a matter of fact, I just got my newest program, Alzheimer's Survival Training, approved by the NAB for 3.75 CEUs for nurses and long-term administrators." And she said, "Oh, wonderful. Let's have you do that too." And I said, "Fine." And I hung up and I didn't think too much about it until I received an email from her. And I looked at the schedule and I was scheduled to speak. I was a 2-hour keynote in the morning and then 3.5 hours in the afternoon.
Yeah.
I freaked. I thought, oh my goodness, I've just committed to do 3.5 hours of brand new material in Mississippi in August after lunch in front of 700 people. So I spent, fortunately we had some time. So I spent the next 4 months putting together the PowerPoint presentation, and I found those little characters on a website called presentermedia.com. And that was the lifesaver. But I cannot tell you, I sweat blood over that thing.
And, I do think I remember a few expressions of worry, but it was wonderful. You did a great job, and people are still talking about it. So
oh, that makes me happy.
Yeah,
that makes me happy. So at any rate, that PowerPoint presentation then became the foundation for the animated videos that have gone into the caregiver support or the caregiverhelp.com website. So thank you very much for that start and inspiration.
It's a pleasure. Absolutely.
Let's just talk. If you were to leave people with one message, and talking to caregivers and specifically family caregivers who are taking care of individuals who have Alzheimer's or other forms of dementia, what words of hope can you give to them today?
I will tell you the one thing I tell to everybody I speak to. If you don't remember anything else I say, remember that Alzheimer's disease and other dementias are not a disease of the soul or the spirit or the personality.
Mm-hmm.
It is a physical illness that kills brain cells.
Mm-hmm.
People's behaviors may be odd, they may be ugly, but it's the disease that's behaving badly, not your loved one. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't behave in those ways if they didn't have that illness. And even if they were not the easiest person to get along with before the disease, it's still not their fault now. Mm-hmm. It's the disease.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that is the most important. When people realize that, it takes, I think, a burden off of them.
It does. It does.
And they don't have to take it personally.
Mm-hmm. And I think it makes such a difference then in the way they can communicate with that person and how they treat them and how it impacts them personally, how it impacts the caregiver personally.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Wonderful. Well, Melora, thank you again. You are always such a wealth of knowledge, and I know that there are three women in the state of Mississippi, you and Kathy, and you said you have a new person that's handling the...
We have a new woman.
Yes.
Yes, her name is Kim Sistrunk, and I think she's going to be a great asset to our team. Uh-huh. We do also have a fourth person who is a caregiver support liaison who works out of the office. She doesn't do training, but she kind of helps field calls from caregivers and get them connected with services as well.
Uh-huh.
So. We are a mighty team of the four.
You are a mighty team, and you're doing wonderful things. Thank you for all that you're doing to help others, and thank you for being on the show today, and good luck with your conference.
Thank you very much. It's been my pleasure.
I know that the conference coming up in Mississippi is going to be an outstanding opportunity for family members and also for professional caregivers to attend, where they can get good information and they can renew their tired spirits. There is nothing that is more helpful than having your experience validated by listening to experts talk about what you're going through and what your care receiver is struggling with, and also having the opportunity to just visit with other people and to share your experiences and to hear theirs. Often being a caregiver can be an incredibly isolating event because it's hard to get out. It's hard to find respite care. It's hard to break away. And so it's very easy to become isolated socially. And when that happens, depression is just one step away. So I really do encourage you to take advantage of these conferences. And one of the ways that you can find it is just to go online and Google Alzheimer's Conference and then enter your state. And you should be able to find something that you can attend. Also, I suggest Googling caregiver support groups and then enter your town or your community, and it will pull up a number of different support groups. And a lot of times those will be either for Parkinson's support or Alzheimer's support or lupus, and they can be, you will be amazed at how many support groups there are out there that that you can go to and that you can participate in. And I think these are really terrific. I'm happy that all of this is developing and spreading, because it hasn't always been that way. In 1993, when my dad had his stroke and my mother became a caregiver, we were not aware of programs that were available, and I'm not sure that there were even that many that were out there. And it really hasn't... it really didn't take off until just a few years ago. And I was laughing about this last night. Actually, my husband and I went out for a walk, and we noticed a lot of older people that were out walking through the park and over this bridge that we like to walk on. And it just occurred to me that there were a lot of older people, a lot of older couples. And then it struck me sort of like a train. And I thought, this is really interesting, because all of my life I have been around a lot of people who were about my age. And guess what? I'm a member of the baby boom generation. So I have grown up in an era where there were a lot of people in my age group. And it seemed like wherever I was in my life that there were a lot of people sort of like me wherever I went. And then I realized last night, wow, there are a lot of older people around here, and guess what? I'm one of them. It was kind of startling. But when you stop and think about the baby boom generation, it's kind of an amazing and staggering statistic. And there is a baby boomer turning 65 every 10 seconds in this country. There were an average of 4 million of us born between the years of 1946 and 1964. And what that means is that the first baby boomers that were born in 1946 started turning 65 in the year 2008. Some people are referring to this as a silver tsunami, because what that means is that 4 million people a year are turning age 65. And because we are living so much longer, it's now not at all unusual for someone who is 70 to be taking care of their 90-year-old mother. Yikes. People are starting to pay attention to this, and they're starting to recognize that not only are people in our age group taking care of aging parents, we're also developing some of our own health problems, and we're taking care of spouses. There are currently 65.7 million Americans. That's roughly 29%. One more statistic here, nearly one in three persons is taking care of a chronically ill, disabled, or aged family member or friend during any given year. 51% of the people receiving care are living in their own homes. 29% are living with their family caregiver. Only 4% are living in nursing homes or in assisted living. What this means is that the caregivers are carrying the bulk of the burden and the incredible financial contribution that they are making is over $375 billion a year. That's right. It's almost twice the amount that is actually spent on home care and nursing home services, which is estimated to be a combined $158 billion. So all of a sudden, there is a recognition of the burden of caregiving and what would happen in this country if all of the unpaid family caregivers were to say simultaneously, I quit. This is just too hard. What you are doing as a caregiver is incredibly difficult, and it is unbelievably generous. And if you are going to be doing this over an extended period of time, getting education, getting knowledgeable about the disease or the physical disability that your loved one has is going to be critical for you to be able to have the information you need to know how to best take care of them. And it's also really important for you to understand that your own care needs to become a priority. You have to become your own caregiver. And this is not easy to do because, as Melora mentioned in the interview, we always have a tendency to think that we should be able to do everything for our care receiver, and we often put their needs above our own. Thank you for tuning in to Caregiver Help Radio. We're hosted on webtalkradio.net, and I'm Elaine Sanchez. When Melora and I were talking earlier about the importance of caregivers caring for themselves, I thought about how difficult it can be to plan and prepare delicious, nutritious meals on a regular basis. This last weekend, for example, my husband and I helped our daughter Lexi move. We are way past the point of schlepping boxes and lifting furniture, so we volunteered to be on kid and cooking duty. We must have been out of our minds. In Lexi's effort to economize, she recruited a crew of young, strong co-workers and our teenage grandson's football teammates, which meant we ended up fixing meals for groups of 8 to 15 people, while at the same time looking after 2 5-year-olds. It was a little crazy, but we were happy to do it because it was a stressful time for her family. She's just gotten a divorce, and simultaneously, our grandsons were helping move their mom's things from one home and their dad's things to another. And in my mind, there was only one thing that we could do to help make people feel better, and that was to deliver good food as they went through the process of splitting one home into two. It was a gift to all of them, and it was appreciated beyond measure. We were able to do this because we live close by and we had the time to plan, shop, and cook. However, that isn't always the situation. Loved ones who need our help don't always live nearby, and we don't always have the time to do the planning and the shopping and the cooking. And that's why I'm excited to introduce you to Greg Miller, CEO of MagicKitchen.com. Magic Kitchen offers a full menu of gourmet frozen dinners that are delivered to your home. Greg, welcome to the show. I'm great, and I wish I had known about you before I was doing all of this cooking over the weekend. It sure would have saved me a lot of time and effort. Talk to us about how you got started in this business.
Well, my partner and I, back in 2005, were looking for a good business opportunity, and both of us have been through the scenario of aging parents, so we've had to support people that need special diets, and in one case, had a tough time getting out to get supplies to make meals. So we came up with the business idea and put it together late in 2005.
Okay. And you decided that you would cook meals and then market them on the internet and deliver them. You would freeze them, like flash freeze them, and then deliver them to people overnight?
Right. Initially, we started in Northern California. We wanted to deliver meals just in the Northern California marketplace, but we ended up delivering meals across the country within 6 months of when we started. And what we do is produce the meals in our kitchens, flash freeze them, as you said, and then we would ship them in a cooler with dry ice. So when they're received by the party that orders them or the party that's going to receive them, they would just open the cooler, take everything out, and then just put it in the freezer and reuse it at their convenience, reheating it in the oven with the microwave.
Okay. When I first went to your website and I looked at the menus, I thought, wow, this looks really, really good. And I thought, this must be very expensive. But when I started putting the numbers to it and the way it's packaged, it looks like the meals run an average of $7 to maybe $12 a piece. Is that right?
Yeah, somewhere in that range. I mean, we have some that are less expensive and some that are more expensive. Mm-hmm. And we try to be meals, the kind of things when you were growing up on a Sunday evening, let's say when you had family or friends over, just mm-hmm. good quality, good tasting food, all made by hand, mm-hmm. no preservatives, and do it at a reasonable price.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I noticed that people can order packages so that you could have bundles of meals for one person, that you could get a bundle of different meals that would all be shipped at the same time, or you could get meals that were packaged for a number of people.
Right, right. We have, two different, multiple markets that we deal with. One of them is people that are living by themselves, mm-hmm. and then we have busy families as well, so it's kind of a combination of those. So we do, whatever makes sense given the situation.
Mm-hmm. And you also have meals for special diets, correct?
Right. We do have, we have two different menus. One of them is what we refer to as the homestyle menu, mm-hmm. and that's a la carte. And you can order just the main course if you want, or you can order the main course, the side dish, the soup, and dessert. And those are set up you know, to be healthy, that kind of thing. Like I said, the types of things you would have had on a Sunday night when you had family or friends mm-hmm. over. But we also have low fat, low carb, low sodium. We have some diabetic friendly meals on that menu as well. We mm-hmm. also have a vegetarian menu that we break off from there. And then we get into what we refer to as our special diets menu. And these are all complete meals formatted kind of like a TV dinner, if you will. So it's a complete meal with a main course and two side dishes. And those are divided into portion controlled if you're trying to control your weight.
Okay.
We have low sodium. We have diabetic friendly. We also have a renal diet. And we also have meals for people that are on dialysis.
Wow. And how many meals are you shipping out during a day?
It varies. I mean, in the summer, it's a little bit quieter.